Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Security Recruiter podcast. Today, I'm joined by Christopher Emerson. Christopher, how you doing, my man?
Doing well. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm good. We've released a show every week publicly, but we've been a bit ahead, so I haven't recorded one for, I can't remember, like maybe a few weeks. So I don't know how good I'm going to be, but I'm going to try my best for you, my friend, anyway.
I'll try to keep up. That's all I can do.
No worries. Thanks. I know you're a busy chap, so appreciate sitting down with you today, Christopher. I'm just going to do you a bit of an intro. If I get anything wrong, feel free to shout at me or correct me afterwards, but I'll certainly try my best. But yeah, started off back in the day, back in the early 2000s at the University of St. Thomas, student supervisor of client services and rapid response. Progressed on to SAP, where you were a QM specialist intern. Seems like you've come a long way since then, my friend. You were then an associate business analyst for Data Recognition Corporation. You went on to be an information, even, security specialist at Larson Allen. You were then an information security officer at Metropolitan Council. You then progressed on to be a principal security consultant at Caresoft, then a lead technical architect at Symantec. Your career then grew up to director level. You were a director of application security at Best Buy. You then held the position of director of security testing services with Target. You've also been an advisory board member for Digital Defense Inc. And currently, these are all positions you hold even simultaneously. You're an advisory board member, MN Cyber Advisory Board. You're also a board member for Mini Hops Gymnastics. You are co-founder and president of Rise Up Ninja Foundation. You are the founder and CEO of White Oak Security. And you are also an advisor of Cyber Advisors. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. That's a lot in that makes me feel really old. All right.
It's good. And there's a lot to talk about today. I know we're going to talk about different things you've got going on at the minute, bits about your business journey. I'm really fascinated to unpack your own personal journey as well, Christopher, because when you hear that, you've basically lived out a lot of people's dreams that will be listening. Like you've gone from like student into like InfoSec consultant to principal to director to founder. Like you've taken that kind of very cool path, and I'm sure there's a lot of trials, tribulations, stories, ups, downs, and things that have occurred along the way, so it'll be nice to get into that. But I know I've done you an introduction there, but I'll start where I always start, which is if you could tell me and the listeners who you are and what you get up to professionally these days, that'd be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you again. I apologize for the long list of things to run through for you to start. That's a lot. So as you mentioned, I'm Christopher Emerson. I am the founder and former CEO of White Oak Security, now a cyber advisors company, which White Oak Security is a practitioner-led boutique penetration testing firm. Additionally, beyond that, I co-founded the Rise Up Ninja Foundation, which is a 501c3 nonprofit. Our mission there is to provide needs-based grants to underserved youth in the Twin Cities area for Ninja Warrior training. When I'm not working on those projects, I enjoy spending a lot of time with my family. I'm happily married, got four wonderful most of the time. They're wonderful all the time. But also I'm mentoring a new generation of entrepreneurs and business leaders in their startup endeavors. And also I do a fair bit of training and competing in the sport of Ninja Warrior. So yeah, that's kind of me in a nutshell. I'm thrilled to be here today and appreciate the opportunity to share my experiences.
Yeah. Cool. I'm getting a bit of a taste of the, my sister's just a little boy, but he's very young. He's only about 6-7 months old. So at the minute, he's absolutely good as gold, but I'm sure he won't stay like that forever.
There are ups and downs, but they're a lot of fun. They really are. As long as you can kind of meet them where they are, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So Christopher, it sounds like you've got quite a kind of diverse range of things going on there. Like you've got your business, the charity, the mentoring. Do you find that just more of a semi on a personal note, but does that help you keep going, keep energized? Does it help you? Does the varying activities almost prevent burnout in a way, I think is what I'm trying to say. Like having those different things, does it keep you revitalized and energized?
Yeah, I think look at like filling a cup, like certain things fill different parts of the cup. So for me, I know my mental being and stuff, ultimately I was like, I find Ninja Warrior training to really help me with that. It It's a nice way to calm myself, to get my heart rate up. And it just, every, after I go and have a training session, I know just my mental processes are faster. I'm much more patient. I've gotten my heart rate up. I'm good for the day. The Rise Up Ninja Foundation itself, that one is really what just helps me feel my emotional and empathetic side. There are times when, you know, running a business, you can't let emotion play too much into it. I think if you really want to be a good business leader, you need to be an empathetic business leader. But there are times when that does become challenging with all the different levers you're trying to pull. So having this opportunity where we can see, hey, there are people in need who will benefit from this, that really helps you fill that emotional side of things. And then from a like strategic mental knowledge area, running White Oak, advising these other organizations is fantastic. You get an opportunity to see new business ideas. You can take experiences that you've done to help others. And they're all like little puzzles that you can just try to fit each piece together to see how to make the whole picture.
Yeah, cool. Thanks for that, Christopher. And yeah, I think there's so much I can relate to there, because a few years back, I was a bit old school. Like I used to drink too much beer and not really exercise and have that thing of, yeah, I'll just get through it. And now I'm like on the meditation, stop drinking. And I'm really all for a lot of the things you're saying. And it all, I try and keep the podcast about career progression, career growth, and just generally being a better cybersecurity professional, if you like. So it's nice to touch on these points. I've heard when you're helping, you know, the stuff when you're helping others and stuff like that. When you are helping others, it's impossible to think about your own problems when you're helping other people. So as well as helping other people, you're helping yourself as well. It's like a win. Do you find that?
Yes. Oh, definitely. When we're brainstorming ideas with some of these other entrepreneurs that we're working with, or these other startups, like you're like, hey, you know, thinking back, I had a similar problem at one point with White Oak or something like that. And we can take a look and be like, here's how I handled it. But you know what? In hindsight, that wouldn't work either. There's a better way. There might be a better way to do it. Or even just having that conversation, like it's a dialogue. I don't know their business as well as they do. I just can't. I won't. But they have different insights. And they'd be like, what if we go this route? They have different life experiences, different business needs. It can help brainstorm and create new ideas for yourself to grow your knowledge or help solve problems at your own organization. It's a two-way street, like you mentioned. It's
Yeah, no, definitely. It'd be good to get into more of the White Oak story shortly, and also the Rise of the Ninja Foundation. What I do want to ask you first, though, Christopher, is, again, looking back at what you've done so far, let's say, what's, and this might be quite difficult to answer, but you've progressed and you've taken that, like I said, information, you've done your education, you've come in, information security consultant, principal, director. Why have you been and then founder, CEO, and then gone on to go for an event and stuff like that? If we go back to the kind of going from principal to director or breaking in, what enabled you to make that progression and those career progression steps in the right way where perhaps others didn't? Is there a secret sauce, or is there anything you were particularly good at, or any advice you've got for the listeners on that progression that you've made in the past?
So I think a couple of things off the top of my head is, first one, like, I'm very lucky. I realize I got dealt a very wonderful hand of cards to start with. There are opportunities that not everybody has that were made available to me. So I'm extremely fortunate for that. But also there is something about being willing to go and execute on those opportunities. There are opportunities that sit there that you just might let pass you by because maybe you don't have the same, we're not all going to have the same opportunities, but you still need to be able to move forward, take that chance and execute on those. And hopefully they pan out. Part of the things that I think helped me to be successful is, one, I've got a very supportive spouse. Gee, without her, I wouldn't be able to do any of this. She's fantastic. And she makes all of this so much easier. Another part about it is just had the drive to do it. Like, it's really lame. But when I was a kid, my siblings and I were all like, we're going to grow up. We want to be rich. We were fairly comfortably middle class. But we're like, yeah, we're going to have this house. It's huge. Like, my bathroom's going to be like the size of this gym. Like, it was stupid kid stuff. But I kept wanting, like, I knew where I wanted to go. I had goals set for me early. Like, when I decided I wanted to become a cybersecurity professional, I knew the end state was CISO. At least at the time, my mental model was, I want to be that chief information security officer, because that's the top of the food chain. And so all of my decisions were geared towards, how do I take the next step on that journey to get to that role? So that was really helpful. And honestly, I think one of the other things that was really helpful, helped me to be successful early on in my career back at Larson Allen when I was doing penetration testing, I got exposed to a type of testing, but we called it on-site social engineering. It's basically you're playing cops and robbers. You're dressing up, playing pretend. It's, hey, look, I'm an IT guy. Let me in and do things that you shouldn't let me do. By nature, I'm an introvert. Like after this call, I'm going to go sit in a dark closet and relax. I really enjoyed that social engineering part, which probably says some really awful things about me as a human being. But that social engineering, like being able to be like, okay, who do I need to be in this situation to move the needle forward, to get where I need to be in this environment that I'm not supposed to be in? It helped me overcome the imposter syndrome. Hey, as I'm moving into more leadership roles, who do I need to be successful? And whether that's I need to be an empathetic leader so I can build up the team because I know I'm not doing the heavy lifting they are. So what do I need to do to support them? That helps me along on my journey.
Man, there's some really cool stuff there. Really cool about having a support. Let's say in your case, it's your spouse. It could, having that support network. It's not the first time I've heard that, and I'm sure it won't be the last. So I think that's a really important point for the listeners. The next point as well, I've read this in a book, and I can't remember the name of it. I wish I could, but it was basically saying, if you're trying to be successful and move forward, like whatever actions you're taking, just consciously think, is this moving me closer to my goals or further away? And that sounds like what you've naturally done from a very young age anyway, being conscious of where you're going. And I'm imagining, Christopher, you'll probably know better than me, but I'm imagining the compound effect of that from a young age is massive.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So I don't know if we talked about this before, but out of high school, I had a different goal, dream in mind. I wanted to be a professional ballet dancer, completely different career choice. And I was like, hey, here's what I need to do that. I need to take these types of classes. I need to get better moving forth. And ultimately, that's I did. So out of high school, I didn't really end up going the traditional hop right into college route. I did that for a little while and ultimately realized that wasn't the right choice. So I knew I needed, okay, now I've got a different goal, a different endpoint there. And so it became time to plan out, okay, what are the steps I need to do? Who do I respect in that industry? How did they do it? And let's try to look at some of the things that they did. Like early on, when I knew I wanted to get into cybersecurity, we didn't have the same opportunities that are available now. There aren't cybersecurity degrees. There weren't all these huge training opportunities. We had the CISSP and the SSCP and some of those like more broad certifications. But even then, you still needed 5 years of network admin or sysadmin experience before you're going to be allowed to touch any like hacking tools. But so I knew right away, like, who are the people who have done this? And at the time, like Aloft Heavy Industries, At Stake, they were the organizations that you got to be the villain in the story and not get arrested. You get to go break into companies. That's awesome. So I started taking a look at what do the people who work there, what are their backgrounds? What did they do? How did they get to where they got to be? And so for me, it was either I had to go the higher education route or the military route. And I just chose the higher education route because I'd probably break really easy.
Yeah, cool. You said something else there that's this isn't planned, everyone listening, but you keep like putting things from books in my head, Christopher, when you speak. But Tony Robbins always says you should be acutely aware of who you're modeling yourself on. And it sounds like, again, you've gone, right, I need to find people or someone or people that are further ahead than me to model yourself on. I think it's really important to pick the right people as well, because it can go both ways. It can be really positive or really negative. So it's interesting that you just did that as well.
Yeah, no, definitely. It was. I'm not an original thinker. I can do really, if somebody comes up with something, I can help iterate on an idea. I think I do okay, do pretty well in that. But I'm not going to come up with Google when it started or any of the, which technically I guess was just an iteration on an idea. But I'm not that guy who comes up with the original one. I'm like, okay, let's start a pen testing firm. Like, starting that back in 2012, there were thousands of them already. It wasn't a new concept. It wasn't now. I was like, oh, really? A pen testing firm? What's that? We've never heard of it. Yeah, everybody's heard of it. But iterating on those ideas, and you find that somebody who's been on that journey before. You may not be able to take all of the exact same steps that they did, but you also don't need to just find one person who's taken that journey. There are enough people who've taken these journeys through entrepreneurship, through getting a career in cybersecurity, and ultimately to see what did they do, take a look at those paths and try to follow that.
Yeah, no, cool. And by the way, that's a skill set in itself. No, you knowing what you're good at and what you're not good at, like, not everyone has that. Like, you obviously, right, I know you're not going to come up with some, you're not an inventor, if you like, but there's certain other stuff that you are good at. And it's like, and realizing, having that self-awareness, I think, is a real skill set in itself. On the ballet thing, right, I notice a pattern. People do well. I see it in recruitment all the time. Like, people that have been really competitive when they're younger can do well in business or whatever it might be, or their career. Do you think having that competitive nature and wanting to get really good at something from a very young age, do you think that helped your career progression in security?
Having that narrow focus of, I don't want to just get by. I don't want to just be good. I want to be the best. I want to have that gold medal mentality to excel at something like this. And I still, like, in ballet, I was very fortunate. There's not a lot of guys. Like, oh, you're a guy? Awesome. Come dance with us. Like, I was like, okay, great. It was, the initial bar was set low. I knew I wanted to get better, training 8 hours a day. Now, when it came time to switch and pivot careers towards cybersecurity, I knew I didn't want to just be okay at it. I wanted to be really good at it. And so it became like, all right, what are the certifications to go for? What are the training options to go for? What are the resources available to get better? Who do I need to have kind of mentor me along the way? How did they get successful? Let's continue doing that as we progress, and just trying to continue to strive to be better.
Yeah, definitely. I can really relate to that myself, you know, mate, because I don't play so much anymore because I don't get time, but I got obsessed with golf when I was really, really obsessed. I used to get dropped off just as it was getting daylight, like in the summer holidays from when I was off school. I used to get dropped off in the morning just as it was daylight, and it was, mum and dad were under strict instructions, do not pick me up till it's dark. I was just so obsessed with it, and I think it has carried over into different things I do in recruitment now. So it's interesting. I think it sets the tone in your mind and your brain, I think, for the foreseeable, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, definitely, absolutely.
Yeah, cool. I'm just going to go back a few minutes, back onto the social engineering side, because I think there's a few things that we can just get out of that could benefit the listeners, because I'm sure you've seen it, consultancy basis, communication is vital. It sounds to me like, from what you were saying, it wasn't something you felt overly comfortable with, but you've you've liked the social engineering on these kind of physical type engagements, and it's almost forced you to get good at communication. It's maybe there's something there, maybe for, not even just for hackers listening, but for any cybersecurity professional listening. Can you talk to us more to, was that kind of, you just got put on an engagement and it was just like you were thrust upon that situation and you just had to get pretty good pretty quick? Like, just be interested to hear exactly how it went down and exactly how it got your communication to where it is today.
Yeah, absolutely. So I remember specifically, so this is again, back when I was with Larson Allen, we were down at a small, one of the branches of a credit union, and we'd driven down, we were staying in the hotel, and there were three of us. There was my manager and then his boss, and we were all kind of sitting around at the continental breakfast, and my manager's like, it gives me, I don't like the way doing this makes me feel. I don't like lying to people. I'll give it a shot. Like, why not? Let's give it a go. Yeah. And so we went and we came up with our initial approach, who I was going to be, who I was going to, what my intended goals were for that particular entry. And we got there and it was a weird setup to start. Like, we pull in and there's six sheriff's cars in the parking lot, which, again, this is my first time doing this. And I'm like, that gives me a little pause. Like, I've got the get out of jail free letter that you take on these types of engagements. I'm like, all right, this is weird. This was also shortly after, like, The Matrix had come out. And in my mind, I had this idea of, I had like that, like, nice long black trench coat. Not The Matrix one, but one that, like, I thought looked like a business professional would wear. And we went in and I was moving to the area and looking for a new bank, that kind of stuff. Seeing if they'd leave me in an area, you know, by myself so that I could plug in some of our devices, remote access devices. But in their conference room, they had half a dozen or so sheriffs in there. I'm like, okay, this is really weird. This is really odd. But let me rephrase. I assumed it was really odd. I didn't think banks had that on all the time. And then I went in, we dropped off a device, we gained access. We then removed the device because we had found a way to maintain persistence, took off. And that night, my manager's boss sent me an email. He's, hey, look at this. apparently the branch manager thought my approach was shady. He was like, this just seemed weird. So they sent, it was a really cool, like old school CCTV photo of me like walking through their lobby. And they're like, hey, if this guy comes to any of your branches, just be aware. And at that time I was like, I failed. They're like, no, you didn't fail. You got in, we got access, we're good. I'm like, but no, I got, like, they basically knew. Like, I was burned for the rest of the branches that we were going to go visit. I wasn't going to be able to do it. And so instantly knowing that, I'm like, I've got to get better. Like, how do I improve on this? What do I need to do differently? So we met with the individual who had sent out that email. We had a call with them after the engagement was wrapped up and all of that. And they're basically like, you seemed really nervous. You were walking around, like asking all these questions. I'm like, okay. I basically like, you just didn't act like a person. You were too much like, hey, these are the things that I've got to do. So yeah, so we just became more of that, like, how do I take on that persona where I'm comfortable, where I can communicate, and I'm not drawing too much attention to myself. And so, yeah, I think social engineering was actually a really great opportunity for me to stretch the bounds of my natural introverted qualities to be like, okay, let's pretend to be an extrovert. What does an extrovert look like? People, they love extroverts. They're the life of the party. They're always fun. And if you do it right, then you can be an extrovert and still be forgotten. Let's take on those aspects and see, what do those extroverts look like? How do they talk? How do they communicate to people? Let's mirror that as best as we can.
And it's good. I say it's really like, almost without even knowing, it's forced you to get out of your comfort zone and I think create that habit probably years before you needed to, which is then just allowed things to naturally flow a lot smoother and better and quicker later down the line.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has. We've all heard the stereotypes of people who work in IT and in cybersecurity. They can be introverts. Their communication styles are just a little bit more awkward. And so you just have to be, like, realizing that early on allowed me to communicate with other decision makers who were not in our space. So when it came time to slowly climb that corporate ladder, it was, all right, I can now talk to these other directors and senior directors and EO, whatever, whomever they are, because I have the same lexicon. I understand the manners. I understand the things that the interests that they have. They might not be as super into Mr. Robot or the latest hacking tools or what certain types of video games or whatnot. That's not their culture, but you start to understand what their culture is, the things that they have interest in. You can communicate more effectively. You can provide frameworks and explanations in contexts that they understand.
Yeah, definitely, mate. And it's for everyone listening, what you're saying there, Christopher, I just think for everyone listening that's serious about career progression, I just think these things are so essential. And I think what you're proving there as well is that if you're not a natural at this kind of stuff, it doesn't mean that you can't get good at it, because like you've just said, you didn't feel comfortable. It wasn't stuff that came naturally, and you've gone down that road and you've proven that you can flip it around, which I think is amazing, really. And it will really inspire certain people, because there'll be people listening now that are worried about their communication, that want to progress, that can't because they can't articulate certain things to non-technical people, or they can't articulate risk to non-technical people, and that will be holding them back. So the fact that you've been able to go from not being able to do it to be able to do it, that's really good for people to hear. So thanks for that, mate.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's really good. And again, for people listening, I was chatting earlier this week about a director role that we're working on in the agency, and the client was talking again, and obviously at that level of communication, talking, and especially they were really talking about what you've just mentioned, communicating to non-technical people. It's such a valued skill set. And I think over the coming kind of months and years and decades ahead, I think it's going to become even more important. So yeah, good. We're not really sticking to the pot. I always say this now, I'm never sticking to the show, but it's good. I like it when it flows. You keep saying stuff at me.
If you put it order in me, I will talk far longer than I should.
It's fine. It's all good. Can you talk to me a bit about Rise of the Ninja Foundation and your mentor and what's going on there and how it all works and how it helps folks? It'll be nice to hear a bit more about that, my friend.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And thank you for the opportunity to wax poetic about Rise Up Ninja Foundation. It is a passion project that I'm really proud of. So it's a nonprofit organization, again, whose mission is to provide needs-based grants to underserved youth in the Twin Cities to pursue the sport of Ninja Warrior training. I wouldn't doubt if many people on your podcast have heard of American Ninja Warrior and its precursor, Sasuke from Japan, that was on G4 way back in the day with those fun shows like Attack of the Show and whatnot. But so several years ago, the American TV show American Ninja Warrior came to Minneapolis. They set up their course right outside of the new U.S. Bank Stadium. My kids and I, we all sat on the couch. We were watching the show, and we loved it. It was awesome. It was had some reminiscing to American Ninja Warrior, or sorry, not American Ninja Warrior, American Gladiators that I grew up on. But it was like going out doing things on playground type stuff. It looked fantastic. My wife had then later on in the year had gotten me a membership to Conquer Ninja Gyms. It's one of our local Ninja Warrior gyms here in Minnesota. And that got me hooked. You could see all these obstacles from the TV, like the huge warped wall, the salmon ladder, all of those types of things. I got to go there and I got to try them. I also got to learn humility, because I definitely remember watching the show and being like, I could do that. I could do that. No, I could probably do that. I could have done that better. And no, I definitely couldn't. It was definitely a lot harder than I had initially thought. So humility, it was good to get to learn that. But as I got really into it, my two oldest kids are really into it. And over the years, started to realize that Ninja Warrior training is fantastic for kids who maybe don't fit the mold of some of the larger, more traditional sports like soccer, basketball, football, baseball. So a child who might be shy or timid, those larger group sports can be really nerve-wracking and intimidating. You've got the opposing team is rushing you. Your teammates are all like huddled around and stuff. And all that close proximity of people, it can almost be overwhelming. So the wonderful thing about Ninja Warrior training is it provides those kids an opportunity to flourish. There is just you versus an obstacle, which also works out as a ridiculously good metaphor of overcoming obstacles. I'm a little bit literal, but it works out well. But yeah, the kid comes up, they get to the starting block, they see an obstacle in front of them, they complete that, and then they move on to the next one. And it's just, you keep overcoming obstacles each time. And the community is wonderful. All the kids will sit there and cheer you on. And it's just really a wonderful sport, particularly, like I said, for the kids who maybe don't enjoy some of those larger team sports. But as these sport of Ninja Warrior has grown, it has become more expensive, which has had the downside of starting to exclude, unintentionally excluding kids who would otherwise benefit from this type of activity and this type of community. So that's why we ended up creating the Rise Up Ninja Foundation. Okay. To date, we've awarded 12 grants to young athletes to be able to partake in these types of activities where they can go and get the training that they need from professionals in the industry, people they've seen on the TV show, who they look up to, they get this opportunity to become a part of that community that kind of gives back to each other, supports each other, and consistently helps them overcome obstacles. So that's Rise Up Ninja. It's been a really wonderful opportunity.
Cool, mate. Yeah. I really like that in a sense as well, that it's teaching everyone the way that you broke it down there, but it's teaching the kids as well about, you can look at something, you can look at some, not maybe the finished article, but you can look at something that all in one hit or something that's 4, 5, 6 years in advance, and it can feel overwhelming, unachievable. Let's say the situation here is, someone comes onto a sports field, they're not quite there, they're not quite forgetting involved, and they just disassociate with it and think that they can never get involved. So it kind of teaching children that if you take a step-by-step approach and a bite-sized approach, all these things, again, compounded together, added together, do get you where you want to get to. And I can relate that to careers as well. It's easy to probably look at someone that's yourself, just gone on and built an awesome business, or someone at director level, you think, God, I'll never get up there. But if you break it down and take it step by step and section things off and take the small wins and have some little rewards on the way, and again, break it all down, it does mean that you look around 3, 4, 5 years down the line and it's amazing where you are. So I guess it's teaching kids from a young age that mentality, but we can all do with having that reinforced. Even I know for myself, I could do with having that reinforced all the time.
Oh, no, definitely. Like you mentioned at the beginning, like when you walked through that ridiculously long list of here are the things from his LinkedIn profile, like each one of those was another one of those steps along that journey. And that's that as a sport, it does a really good job of building on the things that you've learned to help you continue to progress along your path.
Hmm. Cool. Let's talk about White Oak a bit, Christopher, because it's a hell of a success story. I'd like to know more about it. I know me and you spoke a bit off air and you talked about the value of relationships and maintaining them to me before and stuff like that. But be nice to hear for anyone listening that's maybe in the throes of running their own consultancy. Maybe they're doing well, maybe they're not, maybe they're having a tough time. Is there any kind of, I don't know, any stuff now that you wish you maybe knew 4 or 5 years ago, or any kind of advice for people listening that are in the throes of running a consultancy?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, this is all my opinion. Be honest, like I said, I am very fortunate to have been afforded the opportunities that I've had and to be able to execute on those opportunities. I did not do this in a vacuum. White Oak Security was not, it started as a side hustle that was just Christopher, but ultimately that wasn't feasible without the support of my family. And it wasn't feasible without the support of the people in my network who helped me with things like sales and customer acquisition and stuff like that. And as we grew, that support became much more integral. Like, entrepreneurship can definitely have its rough patches. Early on, if handled correctly, it's fantastic. Some of my previous employers just needed additional bandwidth from people to get through their backlog of projects. So I didn't have to worry about sales. I didn't have to worry about customer acquisition. So as a side hustle early on, that was fantastic. I also had a day job, so I wasn't as reliant on it for income. So if the work ebbed and flowed, that was fine. And that's a big part of what I talk to when I'm mentoring other startups, and what I'd recommend to anybody, if you can, try to minimize that risk into small steps. Doing, like I said, White Oak as a side hustle, because it was not my primary source of income, we didn't need the income. So if it didn't pan out, if I didn't get a project in a certain month or a certain week, it was okay. And when we did, it was an opportunity to continue and grow. That being said, being an entrepreneur does come with other additional stresses. Like, as we grew, those stresses grew too. When I made the jump from, you know, being from it being a side hustle to being like my full-time thing, that was extremely scary. I didn't have my steady paycheck. It was my family and I, we were reliant upon White Oak's success. So again, making sure you have the support to do that. If you can, build up at least a little bit of an emergency backlog just in case. But if you've taken these smaller steps, have minimized the risk. If I would have just jumped into White Oak on its own, I don't know if it would have been successful. I don't know if we would have been able to get enough work coming through, but because we started small and then grew a little bit and grew a little bit and grew a little bit, that helped. Being an entrepreneur, sometimes, you know, as the organization grows, you know, those stresses grow. Mm-hmm. You need to be mentally prepared for that. We were, again, very fortunate to be able to have White Oak grow at the pace that it did, to the size that it did. But with every new hire, as an individual, I felt like I was taking on more responsibility, not just to the new team member, but to their family. Like, we needed to make smart business decisions that would allow us to continue to support those people. They're people. They're expecting us to be good at our jobs while they can be good at theirs. We needed to support them. And so that was just additional stress that as your company grows, you need to be cognizant of. Yeah. So a big part about being dealing with is successful is finding what each stage as you grow, figure out what your current bottleneck is. If that's, hey, I need more sales done. If that's not something you can do, you might need to look at, is it worth outsourcing that in some way, shape, or form? That was one of our huge areas that expedited our growth. We found one of our business partners, he's brilliant when it comes to sales. The guy, he's very talented, he's gifted. He knows how to talk to people. He understands that intrinsically in him. The people that he works with, that are clients, aren't just clients. They're also friends. They're, you know, people that like, hey, let's go hang out. Let's have a beer. Let's go ice fishing. Let's go do all of these things that I, as an introvert, I'm not built for that. So finding the people who can fill those gaps in your capabilities will help your organization to grow.
Mega getting an insight into how it started and that kind of transitional phase, as you refer to it as. And I can see the benefits of that, like, big time, because obviously, like, from the pressure standpoint, winning work, it's not. But also, I'm imagining, like, from an identity standpoint as well, if you had just gone straight out, it's almost like the business is your life. If it fails, you're down. If it succeeds, you're happy. But you've created this, you've almost created this thing whereby it's a side hustle. So if it works, it's a bonus. If it doesn't, it's cool anyway. And I really like the way you've done that, because you've, like, just decompressed, if you like, the whole situation. It's a pretty cool way to start it, I think.
Thanks. And again, I was lucky to be afforded that opportunity when I pivoted from just being a penetration tester at Symantec to my leadership role at Best Buy, that was one of those of the key driver at that point for starting White Oak wasn't to start a business. It was, I wanted to maintain technical skills. I had seen plenty of other leaders who did not necessarily understand the day-to-day tasks that their team members performed. And then I saw how those team members sometimes talked about those leaders. It wasn't always flattering, but I didn't want to be that guy. I didn't want to be the person who's like, oh yeah, I know this will be real quick. And it's not. Like, the work that they do is very difficult and very complex, and I didn't want to lose that. That was the main reason that I had started White Oak, was I wanted to keep my technical skills. And I was very fortunate to, at the time, have a leader at Best Buy who understood that and ended up being a fantastic mentor along the way. But that's absolutely fine. You should absolutely do that. Go for it. He's very encouraging and supportive.
That happens all the time, by the way. That's so true about when you lead a team. If you know exactly what the guys and girls are doing, it just benefits. I think the extra productivity and mileage and loyalty, retention that you get out of the team, I think is just massive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. If anyone's listening, Christopher, that's going to make the jump to start out, is that how you'd recommend do it? Would you recommend the... I'm guessing you would, because it's worked for you, but is that how you'd recommend to do it? Start as a side hustle? It's almost like a proof of concept. Like you're checking it, see if it works, and bang, we've got the proof of concept down. Off we go.
The things that you need to get set up. Identify what you want your company to be. That's actually fun. Going through and figuring out, I want to call my company. What do I want my logo to be? That's fun. That's creative, and it's a good time to bounce ideas off of the wall. Register your domain name. Register with your Secretary of State, with the IRS. Make sure you get all of that stuff taken care of early on. Because a lot of the other stuff that you can do as you go. And I honestly recommend doing it as you go. When it comes time to be like, okay, I found my first client. I need to create a master services agreement. Okay, awesome. Then take the time to do that. Don't let, before I start the company, I have to have my master services agreements and my statements of work. I have to have the entirety of my pricing model. And I have to have all the tools built. And I have to have all of these things. You end up not making any progress because there are so many things to do. But if you break it down into those smaller steps, be like, okay, what are the minimum viable product kind of idea of what do I need to do to put myself out there and to start getting that first customer? Once I get that first customer, okay, awesome. Now what do I need to do? I need to get an MSA. I need to get a statement of work. You might need to get insurance. So find somebody who can provide you the right types of insurance. You might need a hardware or software, but as you come through, you get those things along the way. Taking like a just-in-time methodology that they use like in manufacturing. Get what you need when you need it, and then get the rest as you go. You don't probably need a fully fledged HR policy when you're just starting out. I'm sure HR people are going to be upset with that, and I understand and appreciate the comments. Like, you don't need a written-out password policy for your company. Those are the things you don't need yet. You will at some point as you grow and you define that success. But yeah, breaking it down, that is, and if you can, minimizing that risk by deciding I'm going to do this while I have other gainful employment and I have the support to be able to do that. Because again, you have a day job. There are only so many hours in the day. So what are you missing out on to be able to do that? And if you're comfortable with that, weighing that, are you missing, time with your friends, time with your family, just personal wellness time? Maybe this ends up being another outlet for your own personal wellness. But making sure that you weighed that a little bit, that's definitely worth taking a look at. But starting small, there's less risk overall, and it can free you up to make the decisions and to pivot as you need.
Yeah, no, definitely. Thanks for that, Christopher. And I think that what you're saying there is, if you wait for everything to be perfect and get this sorted, get that sorted, the reality is you probably never start, because to get everything perfect, probably without a well-established team, is probably just unrealistic. So just do it a bit.
Yeah, because then there are higher expectations of now. Oh, you've already acquired a couple of full-time penetration testers. They're expecting to get paid. If you haven't gotten that first client, how are you going to pay them? Like, you got taking out big ads, Google ads and whatnot. Okay, but you have to have the money to be able to start those off. If you start small, it becomes, like I said, less of a risk.
Cool. Thanks, Christopher. And so on the hiring side, Christopher, when the business was growing, for people listening, what would you say what traits and characteristics separated someone that was just good or okay to an excellent security engineer or pen tester or any member of any type of security professional for that matter? What would you say separated the okay one to the exceptional one?
Yeah, first I'd harken back to our talk about being an effective communicator. That skill I think is definitely underappreciated. If you can articulate your ideas, if you can be concise, which is one that I'm still working on, obviously, but if you can communicate these very technical, our industry is very technical. There's a lot of sophistication and jargon that we use in our lexicon that not everybody else does. So you need to be able to, I found that if you can effectively communicate to the engineer what an issue is, if you can effectively communicate to the systems architect, to the product owner, and to the executives, you're much more likely to be successful because you understand how you need to frame the story you're telling, the data you're communicating effectively, and it's just much better received, and it makes you more effective. I'd say the other one that I really see a lot of is just curiosity. This is one that, you know, I see some of the stuff that our team does. Like I take a look at as the reports as they come through, and I'm like, where and how and why did you even think to look in that part of the application? Or how did you think to send that type of payload to that service? What made you think that? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times just, oh, I was just curious. I was looking, I was wondering like, why does this behave this way? What if I do this? That mentality where they start like just are intrinsically motivated to dive down those digital rabbit holes helps them to be just really gifted in this area. And the last one that is, you know, near and dear to my heart is humility. I have been very fortunate to work with a lot of really, really gifted people. And then there are some of them who will let you know that they are brilliant. And they're not wrong. But I have seen that sometimes that ends up stunting the growth of the team as a whole. When somebody comes to you with a question, how did you do this? Why did you do it this way? And they're just like, oh, not to take a phrase from one of the certifications, but try harder. Okay, help them on that journey. Help them. Effective team members who, despite their brilliance, are willing to help others, that raises the skill level of the whole team. It elevates that team to a level so that everybody is contributing. And there will be times when they'll have, those brilliant minds will have questions. So having that humility was one of the most significant traits that I look for when I was considering new team members or business partners.
Cool. Thanks, Christopher. Yeah, it's true that I've heard different clients call them divas and rock stars. It's true. I think, let's say, some people do get like that. But I think the way to think of it is, how does it actually help even that person that is gifted by adopting that attitude? Again, is it moving them closer to their goals or further away? I don't really see being that and being a bit arrogant about things and a bit of a know-it-all. It's never going to win you any relationships or do you any favors, even if you are good. So yeah, I don't see the benefits. Yeah. Sometimes, again, you said it's humility, self-awareness. It's just checking yourself constantly and making sure those things are in line, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. All right, my friend. Any kind of books or resources or anything that you could be in your security career, could be in your business career, but anything that you've tapped into over the years that's really helped your career progression?
Oh, definitely. So I enjoy reading. I didn't used to. My wife used to tease me because all I read was comic books and Dungeons and Dragons manuals. And they're awesome. Okay. They're fantastic reads. I highly recommend them. But when it comes to kind of career progression type stuff, there was one book that I got into that I read pretty much once a year. I'll reread the book. It's called Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink and Leif Baden. I picked this up as I was transitioning from that individual contributor role at Symantec to a leadership role at Best Buy. And the premise of it is that title. It's Extreme Ownership. It emphasizes that you as the individual, their target demographic is as a leader, the success and failure of your team rests on your shoulders. If a problem arises, it's your responsibility to identify and mitigate them as much as possible. If your team isn't being successful, that's because you failed to set them up for success. There was a chapter in there specifically that's called Believe. And it is a lot like, I don't know if you've read Simon Sinek's Start With Why, which is basically that, to me, that entire book is effectively that chapter in Extreme Ownership. Believe. As a leader or a business owner, or again, even as an individual, you have a unique vantage point. The data sets you're working with, the inputs you're receiving, your life experiences are different than the person sitting next to you, the person that you're reporting to, or the people who report to you. And so when you're deciding on a strategy for your team, you need to be transparent and help them believe in that strategy, in that mission. And that comes from effective communication. If you have a strategy and you're like, I think we should proceed down this path and here is why, if your team isn't like wholly bought into that, then you probably failed to communicate it well. And it might just be like they have alternate opinions, and that's awesome, because you can get, they can come with other ideas, other potential solutions, and that might make you even question your belief in your idea. And then it's excellent to pivot. But when you are able to effectively communicate and explain why you think this path that you're choosing, this strategy, this tactic, this line of business that you're starting up, it makes sense to the stakeholders, they are going to help you move forward as a unit. You're going to move forward together with unity, and it makes a much stronger team. And it ultimately creates kind of a shared purpose that ultimately makes it much more likely to succeed.
Yeah, definitely, Christopher. The communication piece, we can relate it to so many levels, because it could be explaining a vulnerability in a report to get it fixed. If you're pen testing, let's say, it could be getting budget sign off from a different stakeholder. It, like you mentioned, it could be leading your team in a certain direction and making sure that everyone's operating in a cohesive and in a manner that's pushing everyone forward in the right direction. So all these communication, they can just be related across every level, every aspect of security, whether you're hands on keyboard, leadership, founder, whatever it is, you can just see the importance right across the board, can't you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It is extremely valuable because, like I said, you hit a great example of talking about remediation strategies for vulnerabilities that are identified. You might have an idea, this is the remediation strategy I suggest. Let's proceed down this route. And if they're just like, why? You've got to be able to explain that. And if you can explain it well, they'll be like, okay, this makes sense. Let's do that. And so then you're all moving in the same direction. And that just creates kind of a force multiplier for success. Cool. Also, that book is fantastic if you listen to the audiobook, because okay, Jocko's got this voice like this. And it's really deep. And it sounds really cool. You're like, oh, wow. All right. So I recommend
it. Cool. I don't know if this will be released in time. In fact, it definitely won't. But if it's a 3-day weekend coming up, you never know. I might be able to sneak that audio book in. So we'll see. But Christopher, we talked about a lot of cool stuff, a lot of positive stuff. I know along the way there would have been some highs, but there would have been some lows. It'd be nice to maybe hear about any tough times or any kind of coping mechanisms or ways that you've overcome any tough times or adversity, or how you've exercised that kind of resilience muscle in you. Can you talk to me and the listeners about any tough times you've overcome and any advice you've got for people out there going through tough times at the minute?
Yeah. So I know myself personally, and then as an organization, we definitely had our ups and downs. So like for a specific example, we were in 2020, COVID hit. Initially, we were worried, like, how are we going to do? We were a remote only organization. We didn't have an office. All of our people worked from home. It allowed us to get the right people wherever they were. And so 2020 ended up going really well for us. We were just very fortunate to be positioned in a way that we were able to continue to execute as we did and grow throughout 2020. So felt invincible, had some hubris, the pride cometh before the fall kind of thing. So in Q1 of 2021, it was a slow quarter. Granted, at least it's been my experience in the penetration testing industry that Q1 is generally slower. Q4 is busy because everyone's, I've got this budget, I've got to use it. Or, oh yeah, yeah, those compliance regulatory things we need.
Yeah, yeah.
No, can we get that in before the end of the year? So Q4 is crazy busy. And Q1, everyone's excited about their new budget, their new features that they're going to add. They're coming back off of working really hard. They're like slowly getting up. So we don't end up booking as much work. The sales are still great and stuff. And as in 2020 Q1, the sales were good, but it was slow, which is normal. We're prepared for that. But then Q2 came and it was still slow, and like abnormally slow. Our sales team was doing a great job. They had been breaking their previous year's records. But our clients were just really hesitant on booking the work. There was concerns about another wave of COVID that could hurt the economy. But maybe we're bringing our people back into the office. Maybe not. We don't know. So there was a lot of hesitancy and ambiguity. Having two quarters like that, I was like, okay, this is tough. Now, as an organization, we had always planned conservatively for safety. So we had we kept plenty of money in the bank as our safety net in case times were ever tough. But as we're going through Q2, we're like, okay, we're seeing the safety net kind of slowly start to shrink. And I remember sitting in my basement, looking at all this unexpected bench time that we had, looking at clients who were way past due on their invoices and, oh yeah, we'll pay you, or, oh, you didn't receive the check yet, or whatever the reasons were. And I was sitting there convincing myself, or trying to convince myself, and failing. Everything's going to be fine. It's going to be great. I'm sitting there and I'm like breaking down about it. I don't know. This is all those people that we employ, all those clients that we have promises to. I'm like, how are we going to do this? This is getting, the trend isn't coming back up. And again, made worse by the fact that we did do so well the previous year. Like, what did I do wrong? How was I so stupid? And fortunately, I had those people that I could work with. My wife, again, was fantastic. And just there are times when I just needed to vent. I just needed somebody to just listen to me rant. And then there are times when it's, here, let's bounce ideas off each other. And my two business partners here, Alex Crittenden and Matt Stelmacher, they're intimately aware of what's going on at the organization. So they're like, okay, they see the problems, they see the pipeline, they see the trends. And ultimately what we ended up doing to work it is we broke it down into smaller steps. Kind of like we were talking about with the obstacles earlier. Yeah. What is the actual end state we need to get to? Okay, that makes sense. But what are the things that we can do now? What are the things that we can do this week or next week? What are the small steps that we can break it into? And, you know, a lot of it was preparing and planning and adjusting accordingly. Like one of the things that we did, we decided as, I was like, we're not taking any salary for a while. Not until things turn around. It's not fair to ask this of anyone else. We're responsible. We're not where we need to be. We'll take that hit on the shoulder and we'll just keep trudging forward. And ultimately, the year ended up great. It was another record year. It just happened to have all of our work getting done in a 6-month stretch, the 12-month stretch, which brought forth its own positives and negatives. But ultimately, getting through that is, again, one, having the support of people who understand your vision and your goals, and then breaking down the issues into more manageable chunks. It can seem so much is going on. Every problem just seems so massive and unsolvable. But that problem, that as a whole, can be broken down into smaller bite-sized chunks, and you can take those one at a time and slowly start making progress.
Yeah, thanks, Christopher. And again, mate, it's so nice to hear you talk like that. And again, for everyone listening, like every single guest I've had on has had tough times. I've had business owners on that have said they've been sat there on the Wednesday worrying about how they're going to make payroll on the Friday in the early days, like literally that much down to the wire, sleepless nights and sitting down with the family and going, look, we might have to do, everyone goes through it. And also, if I go to my day job at the minute, I'm speaking to some people that are doing well, but you speak to other people that are good and they're struggling and they're on the jobs market and stuff like that. So I think it's just important for everyone to hear that everyone goes through tough times. I can really relate to that feeling as well, because for being like overwhelmed, that it's, I've almost learned just to almost switch off from it and just go, I'm overwhelmed, but I'm just going to almost just keep crawling forward. And then if I just keep doing that for a few days, a few weeks, and then before you're getting back to where you want to be again. And it's almost a case of just switching off and sticking to your routine. And it's really hard to do, but it is the only way through it. But yeah, no, it's really nice to hear. It's nice that you're open with certain members of your team as well, or the team in general. Like if they're aware of what's going on, you can have that chat, and it's probably makes it a bit easier.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, that's one of the things that we did. We were very, very transparent. We had our quarterlies. We'd show, here is our budget. Here is exactly how much we got in. Here is where every dollar went. So everybody knows. We didn't get down to, here is your salary versus theirs. That's the discussion. If they want to have, that's up to them. But it was very like, hey, here's how much we spent on AWS. Here's how much we spent on GCP. Here's how much we spent on benefits and payroll and contractors and stuff like that. So the team understands and the time understood and continues to understand, like, here is where we are at. Here is why we are there. Because again, like they might have other ideas that you just haven't considered.
Definitely. I promise you an hour. I've definitely gone miles over that. Sorry.
Oh, good. I appreciate your time.
No. Likewise, it's been really nice. It's been really nice to unpack your journey, and it's nice to dive off into some other things that are unexpected there. And I tell you, it's really interesting to hear how these different things you've done, the communication piece and the social engineering and all that, how it's all tied in. And yeah, there's some good stuff here for the listeners. Christopher, thanks for your time, and genuinely really enjoyed that. And I'll see you soon, my friend.
Thank you. See you soon.